in the war economy, we have to build up militaries all over the place, because then we can put them against each other, because the bankers really make money from funding wars and the destruction of the wars. And when they loan people in countries money for war, a lot of times that money can't be paid back, because you can only pay it back with the money that you're being loaned, which is being loaned at interest, which is a recurring loop, which would drive anybody nuts, let alone the people trying to pay compound interest over hundreds of years. But I digress.
But it's well documented that generally throughout most wars, both sides, both enemies, are being funded by essentially these same families and establishments and foundations that we've just spoken about. And ultimately, they fund both sides until they decide, we're going to throw a little bit extra money behind these guys. These guys now, are going to win.
Now, I saw a film a couple days ago, and I was in disbelief the whole time I watched it. It's a film produced in 1934 by 20th Century Pictures, before they were 20th Century Fox, in association with United Artists. And the movie was nominated for an Academy Award. It's called The House of Rothschild. It's on YouTube. You can watch it in 12 parts. And it's their propagandized history of their own doings. And even at that, they tell the story much better than any one of us could ever retell their story. I mean, it truly is priceless. And they give it a human angle, because Nathan and his wife, they have such a love story. And before Nathan goes out and fucks everybody, she always gives him a flower to put on his lapel. So there's his love interest, and, you know, they're just a banking family who is being persecuted. And, you know, even them telling their own story, I just found it incredible how today learned or so-called learned people will deny with every ounce of their being that these bankers control not only our government, but our militaries, our the wars, and that the military is being used to soften the ground to bring in corporations, a la Smedley Butler in his 1934 book, War is a Racket, where he said the only effective way to smash war is to take the profits out of it.
And I believe we could say the same thing about the drug war or any other war on blank.
Well, the only war that has ever existed is the war on consciousness. It's always been a war of people who have more information, a better perspective, a higher perspective, however you want to see it. They have their box is bigger, right? Maybe they have no walls to their box. Maybe they have no limits. Maybe they believe in no God. I'm not sure, but it's always been people who get a hand up, and instead of, you know, lending that hand and trying to help people cooperatively, they always try to wiggle some profit out of it or use it to control and subvert your free will. And so I think where the Darwinists and the evolutionists are wrong is that it's not survival of the fittest and you know, mastering by the most ruthless. It's survival through it's survival through cooperation, and it's about those of us who can understand that, you know, there's something going on. We can work together to survive and escalate through this situation instead of letting it be our downfall. And I think that's really what, you know, everyone who believes in eugenics and Darwinism and nihilism is missing, is that, you know, when you have things set up in a contrived way like they are now, sure, the most ruthless people are in control. Because there are black markets, and anytime you have a black market, the most ruthless people always end up in control. But it doesn't have to be like that if we start cooperating. Our cooperation can outdo their competition anytime. We just have to work together to kind of learn what's going on. And so to subvert that, the planners of Tavistock saw the way to upset the balance of Western civilization was to force unwelcome changes in the race by removing control from deserving and to the undeserving in manner of ancient Roman leaders who were supplanted by their former slaves and aliens. So basically the way to have us go downhill is to put the least among us in control. Let's put the scoundrels and the schemers and the people who would take corporate lobby money and put those in Congress and have them represent us, right? That's a great idea. I'm sure that's working out really great for everybody.
This kind of makes me think of what, you know, as we're talking about the information, ultimately, is that right now, and we're using the technology to try and communicate this information, we have what's literally the 21st century Gutenberg press. We have more information at our fingertips than has ever been available in the course of human history. And at the same time, it's such a cloud, to make another media reference. It's at the very end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, where they roll that ark into that warehouse, and it goes down the corridor and turns a corner, and you've lost it. The information is there. It exists. It's just being kept from us.
Well, and not only is the information there, but someone like Quigley knew, you know, and noticed and commented upon these such things right before his death. At a lecture at the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University, where he taught for so many years, he said, another thing which may serve to point out the instability of the power system of the state, the individual cannot be made a basic unit of society as we have tried to do, or of the state, since the internalization of controls must be the preponderant influence in any stable society. Now, do you know what that means?
I think I basically caught that, this stuff will all work as long as you let us drive.
Right. Well, basically what he's saying throughout this whole thing, because I had to get the dictionary out and start looking up words. I'm like, whoa. What he's saying is, in our society, individual behavior can no longer be controlled by any system of weaponry we have. In fact, we do not have enough people, even if we equip them with shock weapons, to control the behavior of that part of the population which does not have internalized controls. Now, going back to what I said in the first time, internalized control, that means control by media, that means control by propaganda, that means control by your belief. They can't control all of us through weapons and tasers and things like this. That's why they need you to watch your TV and read their newspaper and believe their shiznit and not confront people with your own facts and the own things that you've experienced and learned on your own. Because most people out there, if you scratch the surface, they're only as smart as their news channels tell them. And I'm just saying that there is a better way. You can subscribe to a higher awareness, but it takes a little work on your part. You can't just hand over this information and make it work for you until you do your own homework.
These things, I think, have helped us set the table in a way in going over what you refer to as this body of history of all of these things that essentially happened pre-9/11.
Can I just want to give you one more example.
Please,
of
please.
9/11, and then we can go full speed ahead, because I'm itching to get to that, too. All right, the last book I want to talk about is called The Old Boys, The American Elite, and the Origins of the CIA. This is a book by Burton Hirsch, and I have had it for probably 6 or 7 years. And the whole time since I've read it, I haven't found facts that either point us in a better direction or describe what was going on the best. Because to summarize the whole book, all the intelligence agencies and all the things that we think, you know, were in charge of World War II and all, you know, Vietnam and all these things, they're all created by Wall Street bankers. More importantly, these guys did it as a function out of the Versailles Treaty in 1919, where all these international bankers got together, including Alan Dulles and John Foster Dulles, right? And Wild Bill Donovan. Now, the interesting thing about the Dulles brothers, as according to this book, it says Alan Dulles was working in Bern, Switzerland. Well, there's a lot of interesting things that go on in Bern, Switzerland, but what Alan Dulles was doing was helping foreign companies circumvent United States law. So when you get back into, you know, looking into the roots of the intelligence agencies that provided us with all this pseudo-information to misdirect us with, that's what a magic wand is for. That's what Hollywood is for, because they made those wands out of Hollywood, right? It's misdirection. It's like, look over here, not at our hands, palming the ball, right? So knowing the nature and the origin of our ruling elite and how the bankers and these Ivy League guys, Wall Street banker types, also Wall Street attorneys, create the CIA, the OSS, along with the Rockefeller Institute, which is funded by CIA money and was up until recently always manned by an ex-CIA staffer, right? So looking into these books and better understanding that, well, they do business on basis of deception. They do a lot of misdirection. They do a lot of orgies of evidence, so that you have to look over here at all this stupid stuff that would never be left behind in this situation. But there it is. Somebody put it there. Now we got to look at it, right? And understanding the nature of how they've, you know, done psychological warfare and all the other things that go on. Understanding that and then looking at the evidence of 9/11, and it's like, what's indicative of the crime and what was put there for the FBI to find, type thing. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and I believe it was just a few weeks ago that there was a story about the CIA wants to recruit Wall Street bankers to sort of help them, I assume, watch for money fraud or God knows what, but it was just such an amusing headline to see. It's like, oh, because CIA and Wall Street have never been connected before now,
Well, in Wall Street and the Nazis are directly connected, because here's, you know, the book talking about how Reinhard Gehlen, who was one of Hitler's top men, he was brought back to America, and he was taken in by the CIA, and Gehlen himself would subsequently pronounce Dulles, both Dulleses, both fatherly and boisterous, and he would become close personal friends of both of them, right? And so it talks about Reinhard Gehlen and Alan Dulles helping to set up Mossad, helping to set up Israel, right? Because it's coming from British bankers in the background. And so when you go through this book, you catch the name of this guy named Frank Wisner. Now, Frank Wisner was not only instrumental in working with people like General Wild Bill Donovan and C.D. Jackson, who's the owner of the Zapruder film during that time it was missing. He's head of Time Life, C.D. Jackson. But Wisner, being founder of the CIA and running, he was co-founder, and running this thing called the Mighty Wurlitzer, how America played the CIA through its false media campaigns and propaganda and things like this. Well, Wisner's son is, this guy who's on the board of directors of AIG and a company named Kroll Associates. And so when I was reading The Old Boys, and I'm reading about the antics and activities of Frank G. Wisner, and then I noticed that his son, Frank G. Wisner Jr., is on the AIG SEC filings, he's on Kroll's SEC filings, and Kroll and AIG are instrumental in 9/11, not only its planning and perpetration and benefiting from that exact situation, but also the hundreds of billions of dollars they stole post 9/11 just recently. And, you know, if more people had picked up on Project Constellation 3 years ago, more media personalities who, you know, have large audiences and supposedly have a responsibility to share this type of information, a lot of people could have saved the money that they lost through this whole scheme, because at the end of the day, we had this information, we wanted to get it to you, but we had to learn to make media ourselves in order to be able to get it out there, because other than Maria, nobody else that I know of really played Project Constellation for their audience, except maybe yourself.
Only later when I started the radio show, I think, did I play pieces of it. I definitely passed it off to other people who were skeptical of being critical of the story of 9/11. I would basically hand it to people and say, now listen to this. This will really break things down in a way that kind of gives you the big picture. The beginning.
Well, I was trying to.
Well,
I was trying to connect some dots and make a big picture, but, you know, back then I wasn't as articulate or as fear-free as I am now. I'm a lot better, oriented to the situation. I understand it for what it is and have absolutely no fear because, you know, not only have I had personal experiences, but I've had realizations that have let me know that, you know, fear is just the training wheels that this world puts on you to move forward. And once you realize what fear is for and you realize you don't need fear in your thinking and you let that fear go on the wayside and don't use it, then you'll notice that your actions start to reflect your will. And then you're going to start to manifest, daily events that are more in tune with where you're trying to be happiness-wise. So I can't see anything else, you know, going on than, you know, this evolution based on cooperation and each of us trying to do our own, you know, our looking around and then have the responsibility to ask respectable questions and listen to what people have to say.
Well, and that's, I think, ultimately what I'm trying to do here right now.
It is what we are doing right now.
There is no try. I believe a puppet once said, Yoda. So, and as I'm chomping at the bit to get to talking about the official story.
Let's talk about it.
You began Project Constellation, which again, we referenced at the beginning of this interview, which was your initial message in a bottle. It was your transmission to the world to get out what you had seen. You started off with an analogy about chess. Could you repeat that for us here?
Well,
or paraphrase
that,
it.
Well, I want to give you the gist of it. I saw in my research, I was on YouTube, and I saw this like a magician, like an illusionist type of person, right? Kind of like Chris Angel, but without all the kookiness. This dude's name was Darren Brown, and he had a bunch of different little segments, and I was watching this, and I was in awe, because he was using words. He was using something came to read was called neuro-linguistic programming, which is basically taking your mind, which is a computer, and feeding certain words into it so you do certain things. And he would go out and pay for things with, like, blank money, or he would go up to somebody and basically have them hold a bottle, which is their acceptance of his code, and then he'd say these words, and they would turn over their wallet and their cell phone and all this stuff. Well, in the one video, he sits down and he plays 8 Grandmaster chess guys all at the same time, and it was just so mesmerizing. I was like, how's he doing this? And at the end, what's cool is he shows you how he did it. And I was like, wow, now that you know that, anyone can do this, right? And so the thing was, I was trying to lay out this incredible situation. It's like, you know, would you bet against me? Well, you might bet against me until you knew that I knew this trick and I'm going to win, and then that would change what you do, right? So basically laying out that your choices are limited to the information that you have available at any given time. And if you don't have a piece of information available at a certain time, it may cost you a lot of money, because when you realize it later, you said, oh, I wish I would have had that. I wish I would have known that I didn't know, and I wish I would have paid attention. So that's, I was trying to open people's mind up and basically like, look, you need to stop thinking you know for a couple minutes. Let me unsuspend your disbelief. You know, let me have you think critically about what's being said and what my intentions are. Am I out there trying to get famous? No. I don't think, you know, this is about my story at all. I just happen to be there and then have the fortitude and take the, you know, initiative to do what I knew needed to be done, and I wasn't going to wait for anyone else to do it, let alone try to do it better than I could do it, because strategically focused on this situation, I think I can do it as better, you know, as good as anyone else can do it, if not better, because I have the motivation of having, you know, personally lost people I worked with on 9/11. There was like 320 people that I worked with that died. So I do have a personal stake in understanding what happened that day.
So the poker masters, the trick is, and what Darren Brown did, was he was essentially writing down the moves of the first player and using those against the third player. He was essentially playing them against each other. That,
yeah,
for me,
so you mirror their strongest, you mirror the strongest opponents against each other. You let them fight it out, and you're going around taking everyone's money. And in that analogy is how they control us. That's how
Absolutely.
The world is run. That is how the gangsters do it. It's not that they are like big, hulking, steroid, scary monsters. They're just people with information and bad intentions, and they just don't have the, you know, the wherewithal or the love within them or the compassion or the empathy to get this information to people who are being, you know, adversely affected by it. Whether it's people being poisoned by prescription drugs, you know, because they have got these lawyers and all this stuff. It's like, if it doesn't kill a certain amount of people, then we're going to go ahead and release it. Or if it's banned in this country, Bayer, go ahead and sell the AIDS-infected vaccines overseas to other people who are too dumb to say no. And I can't stand by and try to earn a paycheck and go back to driving a Porsche and a Range Rover and forget. I can't unknow all this stuff. I'm not willing to unsee it. And unless I do something with it, then it's going to eat a hole inside of me. So it doesn't matter if someone tries to shoot a hole in me. At least it's because I'm doing what I want. I'm trying to be free, and my freedom exists because I'm trying to make you free.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's cognitive liberty. We each seek to be free in mind, because if they can't control our mind, then they can never control our bodies.
I think this is the precipice that people who do start to look into this information, perhaps at the insistence of folks like us, they'll reach a point where they'll perhaps shut down or turn off or not go any further, because within their belly they know that once you learn this information, just as you said, you can't unlearn it unless you make that somewhat conscious decision to do it. But I think people don't have to. They stop.
Well,
they don't want to find it out, because then they would have to do something with it.
What would be the logical, reasonable, you know, intellectually responsible way of unlearning reality? I mean, what you're doing is you're unlearning your illusion, but the illusion wasn't real. Reality is something you want to get in touch with. And people have fear and they shut down. And, you know, that's fine, but recognize that you're doing that, right? And you fear because you don't understand. And people are able to hate because they fear. So if people hate because they fear, and they fear because they don't understand, then reading and learning and doing and communicating and taking in some healthy non-corporate media, turning off your TV, canceling your newspaper, and giving your money to people who won't lie to you or aren't lying to you or at least doing their best to get the right facts in front of you. I mean, there has to be a moment where when you discern that a lot of your trouble is coming because you are funding every month the people who are taking away your freedom to have fresh water, to have clean air, to have fresh food and clothing, and to have health care, all of these things, right? But if we can just learn our way out of hating, if we can learn our way out of instantly emotionally dehumanizing people because the media told us that Osama bin Laden attacked us, well, Dick Cheney said Osama had nothing to do with 9/11. The FBI is not looking for him. So who are we supposed to trust? I say don't trust any of those people until they do something trustworthy, right? And when I look at somebody like You know, Senator Barry Goldwater, in his autobiography, With No Apologies, which is a very apropos title, in Chapter 33, titled Our Non-Elected Leaders, he's talking about how these characters, the bankers, took over the Federal Reserve, created the Federal Reserve, rather, took over our rights. And he says, in my view, the Trilateral Commission represents a skillful, coordinated effort to seize control and consolidate the four centers of power, political, monetary, intellectual, and ecclesiastical. All this is to be done in the interest of creating a more powerful, more peaceful, more productive world community. Throughout my public life and in these pages, I have refrained from judging other men's motives. I have no such hesitancy about judging their wisdom and the results of the actions taken. Right? So he goes, trilateral, here's their approach. So these aren't things that conspiracy theorists creatively made up. Believe me, none of us are this creative. They're the books. They're in the libraries. They're all over the place, and people are trying to burn them. Most of the books I end up getting are, like, rejected from the library, discard, and they're the most valuable books because they lead us back to the freedom we once thought we had. Now, we may not have it now, but we have a roadmap in front of us. We have an opportunity to participate with other people who are looking to do the same thing. So, you know, I'm not trying to push anyone to subscribe to the magazine or anything that we're doing, but we're not doing it for the money. We're doing it because it's what we wish somebody else would have done for us. I wish I could just pay $15 a month and get access to the information that I have to work harder now than I ever did at a corporation. So, that's where I'm at.
Well,
with that.
And as I referenced before, saying that, you know, people may turn off and turn away from this kind of information, I don't also want to imply that anybody who doesn't look into 9/11 is just scared because you can't handle the truth. I think there are also...
I'd say look into everything except 9/11. I mean, if you're having problems digesting that people might prey on us as people, as other human beings might prey on us in some way, I mean, if you're having trouble digesting that, then read any other segment of U.S. history that, you know, because it's all there. It's not just 9/11. What I was trying to explain is there are, like, you know, 10 or 20 significant actions that have taken place during the 20th century which allowed 9/11 to be successfully planned, perpetrated, and profited from, and let these people get away scot-free with billions and billions of dollars in fake insurance claims because they all funded and, you know, basically circle-jerked each other in those deals. They're all the same people insuring each other's stuff, and they all know it's fake, and they're investigating themselves. I mean, there has not been any legitimate investigation, and very few of the so-called little blips on the radar screen, intelligence knew ahead of time, that sort of stuff. Very little of that's actually real. Most of it's misdirection, so you never go after the real people who are continuing to do this to you. So it just wasn't one day 8 years ago. It's, you know, the effects and ramifications and consequences are more evident today by the state of our economy than they were on September 12th.
So I guess we'll hit it point blank then, if I can. Why do people believe the official story of 9/11?
Well, that's a good question. There's a lack of historical perspective, right? So kind of what we're doing herein by trying to give you these references in these books is inoculating you with information. You know, it's a vaccination of information so that you can be coherent, you can have the context, you can have the history and facts at your disposal, and you can articulate them in such a way that someone else can consume them and make them part of their understanding, right? So the reason that people believe the official story, well, media, in and of itself, gives you a selective view. They give you a repetitive view, which is, you know, one of the things that Pavlovian conditioning would have you do, right? So these are Tavistockian ideas, if you will, right? On top of that, the media is completely owned. Those companies that you look for every day that you think are your trusted friend in the news world on TV with three letters, you know, those were all created by the people who look at you as sheep, and they are the shepherds, and you are not the same as them. And basically, you are animals to them, which is why they talk about, you know, Ted Turner talks about taking out 90% of the population. So just the rich people and their jets and their private islands and everyone can, you know, exist. And I just happen to disagree with that. I'm not angry with them. I don't hate them. I just happen to disagree intellectually with that. And I think I can say some words that might help to change it in our favor, right? The other part is the government. The government gives you a selective view, and they're not known for their integrity or their trustability, right? In the past, there's been countless false flags, whether it's the Lusitania or the Spanish-American War or the Gulf of Tonkin or all these things that have now come out, declassified documents. They were all started for money.
Well, just a few weeks ago, we had President Obama speaking I believe, in Cairo. It was his Cairo speech where not only did he essentially echo George W. Bush's speech to let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the events of September 11th, but he acknowledged what we referred to earlier as Operation Ajax, and this is the known CIA operation to overthrow the democratically elected leader of Iran in 1953.
Kermit Roosevelt
wrote all about it. So he acknowledged Operation Ajax. So it's this sort of, you know, selective sight on things that, oh, well, yes, this happened, but these other things didn't.
Operation Gladio. There's a book called NATO's Secret Armies. And, you know, all of these things, I mean, when you look at the history of false flag operations, they go back for thousands of years. When you look at Art of War, when you look at Machiavelli's work on the Medici family and how they maintained and attained power, you know, it's all right there in front of us. But like Alan Dulles says, that, you know, public doesn't read. So we're going to make, you know, his group was going to remain in control until we started doing our homework and, you know, not just listening to Vincent Bugliosi tell us it was Oswald with a single, you know, magic bullet. Because Oswald can't make the Secret Service stand down that day. Oswald can't, you know, control C.D. Jackson owning the Zapruder film and editing it, provably, right? So these different things help to block people's view. It creates that blind spot because you have a trusting relationship with a corporation, which is actually a sociopath. So you should look at yourself. Why are you trusting sociopaths to print your money, to educate your kids, to feed your families, to provide services that you could be providing to yourself, and ask yourself why you're paying all these tax dollars, not to the Federal Reserve, but to the private international bankers who were not elected. This is what Barry Goldwater is talking about with our non-elected leaders. And the next step would be, you know, the third one, you know, media, government, and then religion. Are we a Christian nation? Are we an evangelical nation? I don't know. How many of the founding fathers represented Christianity and not some secret society, right? So we have these ideas in our head because of media, because there's a group of 50 million Christians out there, and they're led by Ted Haggard, right? That's his name, right? Ted Haggard?
Yep. You know, among all the others.
Yeah, right. So you've got these characters who are living, you know, hypocritical lives, lying to millions and millions of people, getting them to back a war against people who are, you know, just on the other side of the world trying to live their lives just like us, right? So shepherds don't lead the people, man. Shepherds lead sheep. So that's why James and myself are more of a, hey, I will think for myself, and if you're thinking for yourself too, I think that's safe to work around you, and I'll work with you, and I'll cooperate with you, and I would want you to walk right beside me, but I don't want anyone following me, and I don't really want to follow any of these other pseudo-leaders, because I see the short-sightedness of what they're doing. I see the limitations to their game. I see where they're doing a limited hangout and trying to be gatekeepers, trying to be catchers in the rye and keep people from going over the cliff of truth and figuring out, hey, that what they're doing, they're controlling everybody through an illusion, right? So those are the reasons that people believe the official story. They, you know, those are the, you know, the ballpark reasons. Everyone can have a different, you know, little micro reason, but
those cover the pretty main areas. Those three: government, media, and religion.
Sure. And then it's like the other thing that's in their blind spot is this: like, you know, why? What is the root cause of 9/11? Was it money? Was it power? I would assert it is control. It's control over your mind, your body, your fear mechanism, right? And you just have to understand that there's a group of people who are operating on this planet who have an operating system or a belief system that mandates that, you know, they are chosen to control you, and that you're not mandated, you know, you're not controlling them. They're there to control you. You don't have free choice. Schwarzenegger's made comments about this. Winston Churchill's made comments about this. They are there to tell us what to do, because otherwise we would never know what to do with this beautiful planet and all these resources, right? So they have to make everything artificially scarce. They have to have us not on a sustainable, you know, solution for energy like hemp. They have to have it on something that they can patent and process and control, like oil, because oil gives you a great excuse to go around and collect everyone's land, right? But we don't need to be on oil. But these skull and bones guys...
I was
guys,
just
they,
about
they,
to say, I was like,
who? They have patents on cracking the petroleum and making it into fuel, and it allows them to monopolize. And taking hemp out of the market allows DuPont to produce nylon and all these toxic chemicals, right? And so by taking a natural predator out of their industry like hemp, which you can't patent, and it solves their pharmaceutical problems, it solves energy problems, solves food and clothing problems, it's the most nutritious seed on the planet. It used to be mandated to grow hemp in this country. I mean, we saw this great movie a couple weeks ago called The Union. It's probably the best documentary on the history of hemp and why it's illegal and why it's probably going to stay illegal, because too many people profit in our government from it being illegal, like the pharmaceutical shareholders, the medical industrial complex, the industrial complex for the military, like DuPont, with, you know, traditional arms maker and whatnot. Those companies cannot exist in an economy where hemp is legalized.
So that film actually is currently on my Netflix queue way down at the bottom. So I'm glad to actually to hear you mention that. So I'll bump it up. The Union.
Put it up to the top. There's I've been waiting for a week to get it on DVD. I saw it online. You can see it for free on Google Video. Type in The Union. It's called The Union, The Business of Getting High. It's also on the TragedyandHope.com community site. If you want a two-week register for the magazine, it's in there. You can watch it. Check it out. I guess when you come back to it, the root cause is that these people have this, they want to control us. They have this belief system, right? And that we're not in their group. We're not in their club, as George Carlin would say, right? It's the club that they beat us on the head with. So the idea is that once you recognize, well, some people got here first. They're well-informed. They're using their information against us. All right, cool. They're preying on us. That's not so cool, but, you know, we're dealing with it. We're waking up to it. And so what do? You organize yourself. You inform yourself. You start letting the other neighborhoods and communities know, hey, we've got these group of bandits. They're coming in. They're praying with everybody. They're getting us to use their money. We don't know about money, so we're using theirs, right? It's just always been here since we got here, so it's like ubiquitous to our culture. But, you know, Lincoln printed the greenbacks. Anytime that, you know, you want to take your money back, it's there. You have the ability to print your own money.
Well, and there are three presidents who attempted to sort of, you know, regain control over the money, and that's Jackson, Lincoln, and Kennedy, and we know what happened to all three of them.
Right, so it really does come back to the international bankers, because all the intelligence agencies, all the FBIs, CIAs, all these things work for the international bankers. Watch your James Bond movies again closely. Ian Fleming worked for MI6. MI6 has been around since the 1400s. It came out of Kabbalistic magician John Dee's bag of tricks, and the Empire has found subversion and diversion through misdirection and magic. Very useful to intelligence gathering efforts. So when you watch James Bond again, know that they're really out there working for bankers, and that the bankers are paying not just both sides, but all three sides. Because in the case of Kuhn Loeb and Warburg and these other characters like J.P. Morgan, the Harriman families and whatnot, hey, they funded Germany. They funded the Bolshevik Revolution. They funded Wall Street and FDR and all this stuff from Wall Street. So they're controlling two or three sides at a time and always benefiting from it. So I only say, look, we can't continue to do the same thing over and over again and get an expected different result, right? We can only solve these problems by growing bigger than they are and expanding our awareness, because you can't solve problems at the same level of consciousness that created them, right? Which, you know, that's an Einstein quote. He's telling us we have to go learn. We have to expand our boundaries. We have to expand our consciousness to be able to see the big picture, because the people who we're playing against have a much bigger picture. It's like, why is there no banker on the chessboard? I should have asked that in Project Constellation, and the answer would be, well, the banker moves all the pieces.
He doesn't need to be on the board, or on the grand chessboard,
Yeah, it's their board.
This, I just thought of something wrong. You know, this, the doing the same thing over and over again and respecting, you know, expecting different results is the definition of insanity. So, as we've looked through all these things, and perhaps we were able to kind of shake free of these sort of government controls and the media controls and the religion controls, that there are many, 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 many people who question the events and the media descriptions and the myths that surround 9/11. How, well, I suppose, you know, What makes me do this to this day? I would admit, on some level, I was probably traumatized by the events of 9/11 and need some kind of closure or exposure in a way to try and make sense of all this.
Well, it's not just about that day. You're trying to make sense of the world outside of these walls and these doors in whatever room we're in right now. It's like what goes on out there didn't just happen in one day, and it didn't just go away in one day, and there's a larger set of dynamics going on. And yeah, it can be overwhelming, and we definitely, anyone who saw 9/11 either on TV or in person has some form of PTSD. You just saw a large number of life get snuffed out. You saw people committing suicide, jumping out of the windows to save themselves from the flames. You see all this going on. You see how tragic it is. You see all the victims' families. They're pulling at your heartstrings through the media. The media is pulling your heartstrings by purposely presenting these things in overly dramatic ways when they know that they're not doing a real investigation, right? So I just disapprove of the hypocrisy, and I think that, you know, the victims' families deserve more than that. I think the people who have looked into 9/11 truth to any degree, looking into something other than the official story being 9/11 truth, I think, yeah, everyone has been traumatized, because PTSD is a normal reaction to an abnormal situation. So what you have is 300 million people who are normal, everyday people for the most part, going through a traumatic situation on the news, being shown to them thousands of times, so much that you can't even see it anymore. You can't even see it. And so, you know, for someone who researches to take the videos apart frame by frame and look at what they actually showed us that day, and then to understand the levels of calibration and collaboration that they can do with the video systems that they hold, and the things that they can make happen with TV and controlling people like puppets through television and music, in their newscasts and whatnot. Why is there music in news? I ask you that. Why do they have music in their newscasts? Because they're controlling your emotions the whole time. They are manipulating your emotions. And so I say, I only listen to media from people I know and respect, because I know that they're not going to mistreat me. I know that their intentions are true, and I know it's not going to be anything toxic for me or my spirit.
Right? Well, because just as you mentioned, I was like, well, I always put music under my news, but...
No, dude, I love that, by the way.
It was something I learned... It was something I learned...
I might interrupt you.
No, go ahead, sorry.
If I might interrupt you for a second, I think the music in your podcast is fantastic, because you take information that otherwise couldn't be consumed by people, because that's what I thought. It's like, I started doing it in my podcast a bit because I was like, look, it's like knowing that the human body needs minerals and vitamins and going out and scraping these up out of the ground and be like, here's some vitamin C, here's some calcium, eat this. You're like, no, I can't eat that. Those are rocks. Right? And we need to create food. We need to create nutritious media, the sustenance that comes in through our eyes and our ears and through our hearts. Because this is the only way we can start to heal ourselves from this post-traumatic stress disorder of the war on terror that keeps on going and we have no idea who we're chasing. I mean, it's like Emmanuel Goldstein from 1984, but I digress. The point would be that, you know, it's up to us. We can either feel like the world's gone crazy, or we could say the world, yeah, it was crazy until I started paying attention to it, and now we're making more sense out of it every day. And sooner than later, we're going to understand the user manual first, you know, planet Earth, and know how to deal with these other entities that prey on us for their living, because they're not creative enough to make a living without preying on you and stealing your energy unwittingly. I just don't think it's fair.
Well, and I think
so that's why we do it, you know, what we do. And that's why you put the music under there, so people can get the vibe and they can take in the information and they can start to feel it and they can start to make it part of their bodies. And that makes change in their actions, because just the littlest thought can make the biggest change, right? And so I think it's a beautiful thing, and I've wanted to say that for a long time, that one of the favorite things in your podcast, aside from the awesome information and the crisp delivery, is that, you know, that you keep the mood positive underneath, and you keep pushing people forward and saying, look, it's hard, but we got some music, so let's roll.
I think I definitely chalk that up and thank it to, you know, more of my background in radio and theater. I did a
lot
of...
You have a degree. You have a degree in media production, right?
I do. I had a lot of time spent at WSHC, a non-commercial 950-watt FM radio station at my college at Shepherd University in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. And I did so much airtime there that I realized at some point, it was like, oh, when I'm on the air, perhaps thinking of the next thing I'm going to say, if I have a little music bed underneath me, I don't get nervous and feel like, oh, there's dead air, I have to fill it with going, yeah, you know. And it sort of was a nice little glue and a nice thing that I could glide along, and it could help pace me out and not go too slow or not go too fast. The other thing is that I minored in theater with an emphasis on sound design. So doing sound effects and music and the in-between parts when you do a blackout and a scene change, I think I took a lot of that experience and knowledge and flipped it around a little bit and said, well, okay, we're not going to be playing, you know, punk rock 7 inches. We're going to be talking about what's really going down in the world. Perhaps we'll open the show with a punk rock 7-inch, but it's, again, there to make, you know, the information accessible.
Well, totally, man, because if it's not accessible, then, you know, what are we doing out there? That's why I'm so particular about, I like to be prepared to make sure that I'm respecting someone else's time who's taking the time to give me the benefit of the doubt, to listen to the words I have to say, and to see whether I'm trying to empower them or if I'm trying to be sly and take something from them. You know what I'm saying? And so when I bring it back, it's like just to communicate that which I had experienced as a whistleblower, You have to learn how to create media. You have to learn, you know, I had to learn cinematography, because if you don't have at least as good a production value as the infomercial that people see in the middle of the night, then they're not going to listen to you, even though you have information that's 100 times more pertinent to their survival than the infomercial. They will watch the infomercial and zone out and just go with the program because it's professionally produced. It has quality sound. It has good camera angles and good lighting, you know, and it has a format that they're comfortable with. And so what I tried to do with 9/11 Synchronicity was purposely break all the formats, break everything that, you know, culture had said. And I said, I want to see who can follow me down this path, because the people who come out on the other end of this podcast are going to be educated. They're going to be active. They're going to have taken the initiative. And I work with a lot of the people that have made it through that whole podcast, because it's more of a homing beacon for people who are kind of tuned in and have long attention spans. Because if you can make it through a 14-hour podcast, then you have the attention span necessary to look at some of these larger pieces of information that make everything else make sense. I mean, there's keystone pieces of information out there, but it's no good to people who can't turn that key, you know, with their mind. You've got to understand these things. And there's something for doing things with the information as opposed to just hearing it on the radio in between Berkey water cooler ads. Just me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think,
or it's like, I would mention that it's like every time in the past that I had done an interview on one of the stations that does commercials every couple minutes, I felt like they were getting me on there just to get people to listen to the commercials. And it's like before I had time to make a coherent thought, oh, again, we got to listen to this fear-monger commercial. And I'm like, when we designed Tragedy and Hope, we said, look, what's the critical flaw to all this corporate media? And well, it's the advertisers and the profits that come from that. It's like, all right, so let's take those out of the equation. What do we have now? Well, now we have something that actually performs as designed and serves its purpose. And then that's something that, you know, is good, because you can put out the video, the audio, and the text that people need. Because it's not just about reading a book. So you got to read this book, and then you got to watch The Hidden Agenda with Norman Dodd, which is a DVD. And then you got to read this other text and watch this other video from YouTube. And this helps you fill in the blanks, because there's no official history on this yet. There's only the pieces they've left us behind and the pieces we can fill in to get this picture. And, you know. So
picking up the loose change, if you will. Sorry, I had to say it.
Following the money, picking up the loose change. It's what it's all about. You know, those people have so much money. The people who are doing this have so much money that they left loose change all over the place. And if you just follow the money, it leads you back to these corporations, back to these intelligence agencies that are created by these international bankers who have been ruling over us unwittingly, you know, for us unwittingly for 100 years at least. But, you know, in the current form, 100 years. So none of this is new. When I showed some of this information, like the Hidden Agenda, Norman Dodd, to my dad, I said, look, here's what's going on. These foundations had been influencing our education system. This explains why people don't realize and people think they know, and the history they've learned is not necessarily accurate. And he said he understood that it had been going on, but tracing it all the way back to 1901 credibly through this Hidden Agenda DVD, he's like, I didn't realize it was going on for 100 years. I knew something was going wrong, but, you know. And so even just sharing it with friends and family, they are now able to open their eyes, and it's not too bright. You know, it's not so bright that they have to close their eyes again, using the allegory of the cave metaphor. People are now starting, you know, to be more in tune, because I think that's what a lot of people can't communicate. We're communicating at this frequency of fear if we're listening to the radio and those ads. And we're like, you gotta listen. And these other people who are in corporate matrix land, they're on this other vibration. And so what we were trying to design in Tragedy and Hope was the practical application to bridge these two vibrations, to take people out of that fear mode and into a comfortable place where they can, you know, articulate these facts and pieces of data succinctly and communicate with people, because that's what corporations benefit from, us not communicating. The whole world is controlled, basically, because we haven't communicated the answers we have among all of us, right? So, you know, we're kind of back at the beginning. If you look at the history of conspiracy that people don't, you know, believe, you got Machiavelli's and the Medici's and the origins of central banking and whatnot. If you take away corporate personhood, then you don't have these magnates who are able to finance, you know, communism, the Cold War, Hitler, the War on Terror, all of this stuff, right? If you take away Tavistock, then you don't have these people controlling every piece of media that you've been exposed to your whole life for the most part, right? And if you look at who benefits from something like 9/11, you're seeing that Kroll and AIG and companies like this participate. And then AIG's actions with all these bailouts, you know what that's doing? It's ruining the credit of the securities derivatives and the subprime loans, right? It ruined the credit rating. So Kroll is now coming out with a new credit rating firm. So they create these disasters to give you these solutions that otherwise you would say, I don't need that. But
so,
hey,
there it is. No? That's the what's Hegelian referred to dialectic. As the Hegelian dialectic, problem-reaction-solution. These gangsters and banksters create the problems to get the reaction out of us so that they then have the political and social capital to offer their solution that was already written and was sitting on the shelf and was waiting for the catalyzing catastrophic event to be able to pass it.
Exactly. Couldn't put it better myself.
Do you need to change tapes? I was just about to say, because we just cracked another hour.
Yeah, Lisa just changed the tape in front of me, so I'm good right now. But how much longer do you... I'm good to go as long as you want. We can edit out whatever you'd like. What questions did you have that we didn't get to yet, and what questions do you think your audience wants answered that they haven't had answered yet?
I would, and as I was kind of thinking it out as we were kind of going through it, because I said to you earlier, I was like, well, Radio for All won't really take a 2 hour or a 3 hour episode. Maybe what we can do here is I may be able to break it down into two parts so that, the files aren't too big and Radio for All will let me upload it and we can sort of maybe have a part one and a part two. I also like to keep it manageable so the radio stations and some of the places that replay the episodes, that it makes it a little easier for them to manage, where it's like, it's easy for you to plug this into an hour slot, or some kind of round number.
Absolutely.
So let's actually, and I don't know if you need a break or anything else, but I would like to hear, a capsule, because it's kind of difficult to understand sometimes. The financial situation that you saw pre 9/11. Ultimately, the devil's advocate thing of being like, well, what do you know about 9/11? Why should I listen to you?
All right. Well, I worked in the World Trade Center. The office, like I said, was on the 96th floor, and being there that day, I have personal experiences. Now, I don't want anyone to take my personal experiences and try to go around and convince people about 9/11, because the personal experiences, you need some experience to understand what was going on. You have financial services companies that are seeking to take people out of the process, because they used to do things on things called paper. So people would write up a contract, they'd write up a bid, they'd write up a proposal, they'd write up a money transfer on paper, and there were papers and filing cabinets, and these things could be used as evidence in cases. And the financial services company said, hey, wouldn't it be great if we took like these 500 jobs here and we got rid of those jobs? And instead, we just put all those papers, we just scan them in. So we'll hire one person who scans in these documents, and they save a lot of money, not only in manpower, but now with the computer, they can set up these automated systems using the software we're designing. And they can transfer money all over the place without any prying eyes looking to see if, this is legitimate trading or legitimate securities. It's actually what caused the entire bubble that's ravaged the financial economy over the past 2 years. It was all preventable. It was all pre-planned by people who know your financial systems much better than you. They have control over the systems that watchdog over your financial systems and the stock market and whatnot. That's how they're able to do the insider trading ahead of time. It's how they're able to steal, in the case of AIG and Marsh, hundreds of billions of dollars from their clients and from, the government, which ultimately got the money from hardworking, people living here in America trying to raise families and live their lives. So when our wealth is so easily transferred to these gang bankers who get paid out in these huge bonuses, and oh, by the way, the people who got the bonuses from AIG are part of the real ownership, which is why they don't want you to know who got the bonuses, right? Going back to that, it's like, from my perspective, I was blinded by the money, because when you're getting paid $90,000 or $100,000 a month sometimes, you tend to not question a whole lot because you're busy spending your money and you don't have any financial incentive to question anything. In my case, I had gotten a paycheck that was significantly lower than the records indicated it should be. So when I questioned the records that I had from the client to the records my company was using, I noticed a huge discrepancy in the money. Like my company was transferring a whole lot more money than they were going to pay me commission on. And as a salesperson, and that's how my livelihood works, I was concerned about my commission check. So all I did, I wasn't trying to play a superhero or bring down the system or, anything.
You
I
said, hey, you're trying to screw me.
Since my whole team at the company, there was like 3 or 4 people under me, so they also got paid based on what my sales are. So I wrote an email to my team saying, hey, look, our paychecks are going to be less than we thought they were from our documents, right? and let's have a meeting on this tomorrow morning when I get into the office. Let's do it at 9 a.m., and we'll just talk about this. And basically, I was thinking, if anyone on the team had overextended themselves and they needed me to loan them some money for the month or whatever was going to happen, because that happened from time to time. People outspend themselves when you have so much money coming in. It's just ludicrous land, right? So I go into the office, and before I can even get to my office, I'm told to go into my boss's office. I walk in the door. This dude, behind me shuts the door. He was hiding behind the door. His name's John Judge. He lives up in Massachusetts. He worked for Silverstream Software, and he says, "Rich, today is not your lucky day. We're letting you go." And so I sit down. I'm beside myself because I just closed a deal the day before that's getting me $1 million commission check. So I'm having a little bit of an issue with this, and I say, "Look, what's the problem? Is it with the client? What's going on?" And they just basically tell me they want my commission check. They think they can keep the account open without me there. I'm no longer necessary type thing. And the guy who fires me wants to take the check. I was like, all right, not a whole lot I could do. So fast forward, I tried to, spend a bunch of money all summer and forget about it. And I end up in a situation in late August of 2001 where I had just been in the hospital and had to have an emergency surgery. My gallbladder had, blown up, and it was just crazy emergency circumstance. I'm in the hospital, and my health insurance is about to run out. Lo and behold, here comes the CFO, the Chief Financial Officer of Silverstream, which was a publicly traded company, and he says, "Look, Rich, we want to extend your health care benefits, and we want to give you $9,999, not to talk about anything you did for Marsha McLennan." I was like, all right. And I took the money because I was so dumb. I was like, oh, whatever, I need the health care benefits right now. I still have stitches, And basically, they used fear to get me to participate in this contract. Well, then after a couple days, I thought, well, nobody gives you that much money for nothing, and it's kind of a weird amount. And then, it had dawned on me that they used that amount because then it's not reported to the SEC or the board of directors. And if it was $1 or more, it would have had to go on their records, right? So they're trying to keep it below the radar. So I'm like, well, I'm out of working for them. I don't communicate with people from Marsh really anymore. But being that their jobs are on the line, that the software is going to remove their jobs, the necessity for them being there, their livelihoods, their careers, their families, I was like, I should reach out and give some of these documents over to some people there that I trust. So I called his number and I left a message for the receptionist of Catherine Lee. And you can look her up on the internet. She was an IT manager at Marsh & McLennan. And I got a message back the next day directing me to drop the documents that I had off at this meeting, a manager's meeting that was going on the next morning. So, if you look on the internet, there's Ellen Clark, who is the chief information officer, the global chief information officer. She had her employees in the office early on the 96th and 97th floors of World Trade Center 1, North Tower. She made sure that they were on the phone, on a conference call, in the office, while she was out of the office. I think she was in London, safe in London, and she was on the phone with her people when the explosion went off in the North Tower on the 96th floor at Marsh's headquarters, or not their headquarters, but their significant office of 320 people in the World Trade Center, their IT center. And the meeting that I was supposed to go to was a separate meeting. It was being run by a man named Michael Darvish, D-A-R-V-I-C-H-E, and who's, by the way, in a business now with a member of Council on Foreign Relations. But I digress. Darvish was having this meeting. He had all his people in the office on a conference call, and he sat in his Upper West Side apartment while the conference call buzzed out and clicked off. So I was sitting in traffic. I was in a convertible. I had the top down. I've got this blue folder next to me of these documents, and I'm supposed to deliver them up to the 96th floor. Between 9 and 9:15, there was supposed to be a break in the morning meeting, and I was supposed to just kind of come in, drop them off during a break, and leave. And after that, I was planning on going to the beach. My buddy in New Jersey had a beach house, and it was like the last weekend. So I'm in shorts, I'm in a Hawaiian shirt, I'm in traffic a couple blocks from the World Trade Center, and I don't hear anything fly over me. I don't hear any screeching plane. I don't hear any explosion. I'm, a couple blocks away, and I look up, and it's just black smoke coming out. You can't even see the hole in the building yet. So all I see is black smoke coming out of the place where I'm about to go, and I have a lot of friends that work up there. And I'm looking at this, and I'm trying to understand it, and I turn on the radio in the car, because I was listening to a CD. And they say, a helicopter is hit, and that kind of made sense, because I thought maybe a helicopter could blow into it, because working the Trade Center, you could look down from your office and see helicopters flying below you at 900 feet. And, you know, then they said it was a Cessna on the radio. I thought, well, it's a little harder to fly a Cessna and get blown into a building, but okay, maybe that happened. And at one point, after like 10 minutes or so, some of the cars in front of me were turning around and going back up West Side Highway. I made this left onto a street called, I believe it's called Busy Street, and I was between World Trade Center 7 and World Trade Center 6. World Trade Center 7 was on my left, World Trade Center 6 was on my right. And at the moment that the explosion happens in the South Tower, I notice, boom, 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 like flash, 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 in World Trade Center 6, at near ground level, and I know that these two simultaneous events cannot be independent of each other. They must be related to each other. And for such big explosions, I then knew, my subconscious said, you don't know what's going on in this situation. You must remove your person from this area right now. At which time I took off and I went up this one-way street the wrong way. I went through the Holland Tunnel. I drove into New Jersey and as fast as I could down to my friend's place who I went to high school with. I go in, I wake him up. I'm like, look, you got to turn on the TV. There's crazy shit going on, dude. He gets up, we look at it, and, you know, what they were showing on TV, even, you know, 40 minutes later when I was in New Jersey, was not reflective of the spirit or the mood or what was going on at Ground Zero. So already that morning, they were showing things in a different perspective, in a different light, with different angles than what was going on down there. And there's so many questions and there's so many pieces of evidence that contradict what the official story is. And there's so many pieces of evidence that they put out there that they've taken away or they won't let you look at it. And it's like, if that's really what happened, why do they have to hide so much of it from us, right? And it's like, it's those questions based on that experience that make you ask. Now, Marsh and McLennan, again, my client, was they had stock put options placed on them the week before. They were, you know, 61 times the normal bid rate. Marsh and McLennan was, a great business at the time, like, financially, according to the market. They had no risk. They were the number one in their market space, right? So why would somebody be betting against it so vehemently? And at the same time, betting against American Airlines, which coincidentally seemed to intersect on 9/11, right? And more importantly, how did Arab hijackers do that? I'm not saying they're not capable or they're not smart. I'm just saying they do not have the organizational ability, given the fact that Al-Qaeda is the name of a file, according to Robin Cook. It's the name of a file, in a database of these guys who they used to pay for Mujahideen. And I had said that in 2006 in Project Constellation. I laid all of this out for people. And yet, to this day, I think yourself and myself and Maria and a handful of other people have been able to grasp that information and to make it useful.
Now, when, you know, friends of mine, family of mine, you know, who sometimes jokingly say, oh, hi, you know, you and that conspiracy stuff, I thought maybe we might need to have an intervention or something, ha, ha, ha. What is it for them, you think, that makes them sort of resist it? And the questions always come of just like, well, why would they do that? If it was a conspiracy, it would take thousands of people and it would have come out by now. They're all inept. George Bush couldn't hide WMD in Iraq. How on earth would he blow up the World Trade Center?
Well, I'm not saying George Bush had anything to do with
the World Trade Center.
He's just an actor who is paid by the same production company that put on the special effects for you, right? It's not that thousands of people would have had to keep the secret, but there are these things called oaths. And either you're in a secret society or you're in a military organization or you're compartmentalized with your information and you never know enough for the big picture and you get paid so well and they have such control over your life that you never have an incentive really to ask any of those questions.
I put this peg into this hole and I send it down the conveyor belt and where it goes I don't care because they pay me very well.
Well, it's like the worst things in the world don't happen because of evil people. They happen because other people are apathetic enough to sit by and watch all this evil be perpetrated. And it's done through propaganda, whether it's the Soviets in World War II, the United States propaganda in World War II. I mean, Bernays and Lippmann and the Tavistock Institute created propaganda, not created it, but effectively used it, institutionalized it such that you are bathing in their propaganda daily. If you recognize, let's say, the different steps of propaganda, like the bandwagon technique and these, the folksy routine and whatnot, you would be able to have a little alarm in your head that goes off every time politics or, you know, these politicians, the economists, or your news broadcasters start to use propaganda to get you to on their position, right? And you will say, oh, I get that. They're trying to use this technique, and I'm not taking them seriously now. It's the same thing. It's like if you go to New York for the first time and you see the shell game being played, you see people winning money, and you think you're going to play, you know, play the shell game and win some money, you obviously do not know how that shell game works. Because if you knew how it worked, you would cease to be entertained. Entertainment means distraction, right? So don't be distracted by what they're doing. Don't be distracted by the magic wand. I'm telling you, as somebody who worked on the backstage crew helping these guys get their software, until I found out what they were doing in front of the stage, like, it was all cool. I'm like, I'm just selling software. Nobody's getting killed from selling software. I had friends that sold pharmaceuticals. I'm like, yeah, you're probably killing people with that stuff. Software is totally, you know, it's cool. I'm making money the clean way. Little did I know, right, that one day you meet those people and it's like, look, this is the way it is because this is survival of the fittest. This is how it's always been, and you should give into it. You should take the money. You should shut up. I mean, in the past, it wasn't more than a year ago that we had somebody approach us and offer $3 million cash. We could pick it up the next day. Do you want this? And my question was, what can't I say once I get this? He's like, you can't say any of the stuff you said tonight. He said all that stuff that, you know, you guys, we went to the premiere of Paul Verge's Hijacking Humanity in Vancouver. And he said all that stuff that Carlin was saying tonight, that upsets people. You can't have that out there. You can't be telling them that they have owners. He's like, that's the fact. He's like, fraternal societies, we control everything, yes. And so basically it's like, there's this fraternal society that's tied to P2 and they're offering this money. And it's like, you can say yes or no. I said no, I'm still here.
That reminds me of a story that the late Aaron Russo said, that he had become friends with a guy named Nicholas Rockefeller, and that would always essentially say to him, like, man, why do you worry about, you know, helping people? Or, you know, either they're too
stupid.
Because
I'm one of those people. I get that. Yeah,
they don't want your help.
Right? Yeah. It's like Nicholas Rockefeller, because he sees those other people that aren't him or not in his group or don't read his book that he reads that he thinks is God or whatever. Like, they dehumanize. And once they can dehumanize it, they say it doesn't matter about those people. They're doing it to themselves. It's their negative attitude. They could only, if they only would embrace positive thinking, everything would change. Now, positive thinking alone is not going to do it. Positive thinking plus knowing the lay of the land, having an accurate map, something that's reflective of the terrain, oh, yeah, you can get someplace then. And they don't want you to have that. They don't want you to have a coherent idea of what's going on. They don't want you to know who your owners are. That's why they put a government there, so you can't get to them with a guillotine, right? They're like, oh, as soon as they get to the president, then they know to change things up. The people are on to us. We better put in a different president, you know? But right leg or left leg, Republican or Democrat, it's the same body, and they are progressing straight toward their goal for the past 100 years. They wrote it down, and we have not really knocked them so much as a foot off of their mark yet. However, by getting people organized and getting people in front of other, you know, microphones and cameras and talking intelligently about these things, such that the goal is not to talk amongst ourselves, but to empower each other with the tools and the instruments such that we can communicate what's going on in this country to other people who have the resources and ability to do it, right? We have all the will and the information in the world, but we need people to step up who have the money and the resources to get this information out to more people, right? I'm not looking to get paid and be a millionaire off of this, and neither are you, but we can't do it like eating one meal a day and, like, you know, all the other things that have had to go on to get cameras and to buy microphones and to pay for servers and to build websites. You know, we have been doing this all single threaded, not just me and you. There's also James Corbett. There's also Maria. There's also Jack Blood. There's David Icke. There's all sorts of people out there trying to research. But then there's people out there who want to say, oh, all that guy's good for is he talks about lizards. Well, did you learn about the 300 other things he talks about that are actually valid? And yeah, maybe he had some experience that, you know, whatever. We can't judge him on that. We can only take people for the best facts and information they're willing to purvey to us and put out there and use it for the best of our abilities, right? So it's like, I don't have to like every word in the book to draw some useful information out of there. And I'm certainly smart enough at this point not to judge books by their covers, right?
That's exactly right, and it reminds me also of the late William Cooper. It's easy sometimes to dismiss his work and his research because he talked about aliens.
Well, from my perspective, it's like, look, I do not know if there are aliens or if they're not. I haven't spent a lot of time. However, the things that I have seen are put out by various secret societies to misdirect you away from what's actually going on. There is no supernatural explanation needed to explain the human behavior and the social engineering that's been going on. I can show you logical, reasonable, factual data on how this is all going on. So we don't need to include little space people who make us feel like we can't do anything about our own history or our own future. We can do it. You are the most important person in your life. You know about yourself better than anybody else. You know what's best for you. And what's best for you is probably not looking out to the, you know, someone else from another planet going to help us or hurt us. Let's just look at what's going on here. Let's look at who we call our leaders, why we let them lead us, how we got convinced to let them lead us in the first place, and why we have people that we follow anyway blindly. Shouldn't the people in government, aren't they there working for us, representing our interests? I don't know the last time that anyone's senator or congressman was like, you know, hey, what do you guys think we should be doing in this situation? Obviously, they think once they get in there, is whoever's got the biggest check in the checkbook, hey, yeah, I got your position right now. Page me on the Senate floor. Just let me know which way to vote. The check clear or not? That is literally how it works. I've been there with congressmen and senators, you know, because I had friends that worked in their offices and stuff when I lived down in D.C. and Virginia. Everyone down there is working an $18,000 a year job in one of these places, taking their you know, calls from a banker or a lobbyist and telling them what to do in our government. So we have no more direct communication with our senators and congressmen and supposedly elected leaders. So I say, let's start with a clean slate. Let's have this next election be all sorts of people, all sorts of 9/11 truthers and activists and artists and filmmakers who say, look, I have a better idea what's going on because I've been doing the homework, and I'm going to go out there and just, you know, it's not about getting elected. It's about making these others scoundrels improve their game, you know, because the way it's going, it's like, if they want to rule the world and they want to do all this stuff, that's cool. You guys been doing it for 5,000 years. Awesome. Really proud of you. Not very creative, but you guys are consistent, right? So here's my point. You guys did it. I didn't know about it for a long time. So clean up your game so I don't have to know about it ever again. So you guys go into the background and visibly control everything to your fucking heart's content, right? But when I have to spend so much of my time looking at the idiotic shit that they purvey out there, asking people to believe it, and then seeing all these people being dumbed down and wasting their human existence and the preciousness of their life being consumed by Britney Spears and Michael Jackson and all this other stuff that they're putting on to misdirect you, right? And if you look into what Michael Jackson said about the New World Order and all these other things that supposedly don't exist, Sony's, you know, Standard Oil of New York, you'll see why he's dead and there's a bunch of people making money off his records today. He was killed. It was a homicide through pharmaceuticals, which currently isn't that illegal. So it's an easy way to pop out somebody who's about to go on tour and influence millions or hundreds of millions of people with love and humility and, you know, a sense of expressing yourself creatively and changing the world, because you're never going to get world peace until you find peace in yourself and you're willing to hate no one. And that's what these people don't want. They want you to pick up arms. They want violence. They want hate. They know exactly how to make money from that. But they do not know how to make money from peace. They do not know how to make money from hemp or a hemp economy and saving our planet and ourselves at the same time. All the facts are out there. We put them in the first edition of Tragedy and Hope, but there's 180 pages in there. You've got articles, audio, video, everything on the energy solution, the financial solution, the health scare situation. And we show you not only the tragedy, we not only show you what's going on, but we show you the hope. We give you the solutions. It's the only magazine in the world focused on giving you the solutions to the biggest problems that face mankind. So it's not, you know, it's not something I ever have to try to go and sell. I just have to let people know it's there and what it is and what it holds, and they kind of do the rest. Because it's logical. It's a logical extension of the internet, because it organizes data, and without organized data, knowledge is not power until it's organized and directed at a definite end. That's what Tragedy and Hope is. It's a practical application of everything we've talked about in this whole show. It is a way that is there to empower yourself, other people who are producing content and media, other people who want to get involved and just want to do something small every month that adds up to the whole world of difference that you're in part experiencing within the confines of this audio interview.
I think that that is probably the best way to cap this off. And I think it all kind of culminated with the reality that these people, yeah, like you said, they aren't necessarily sinister, evil creature monsters. They're people with names and addresses, and a lot of what they've done has a paper trail. And the other solution, too, is that we can see that. We can more or less just say no, and there are solutions. So just as, you know, these guys, you know, have names and addresses, the problems have solutions, ultimately. And again, the media has pretty much always told us that you have no power, you have no control, people smarter than you have it all figured out, so just don't worry your pretty little head about it. But if there are those two things that we hit, I feel like ending corporate personhood and growing hemp, it really kind of gets at the heart of really, I think, what we could do with real changes.
Well, I'll even take it one step further. I would just make this simple observation. It's a quote from a guy named Daniel Boorstin, who used to be a librarian of Congress, and he's also a Rhodes Scholar. So Cecil Rhodes, in his will, is sending this quote to you, and it can set you free. Because here's what it says. It says, the greatest obstacle to discovery is not ignorance. It's the illusion of knowledge. So stop thinking that you know something without having done it, right? Belief in ideology, the doing of things that we don't know what they mean, but we do them anyway, right? If you replace what you think you believe and see that belief is a placeholder, it's an invitation for you to fill in this area with some real experience, with some learning, some doing on your own. Do not rely on your beliefs. Your beliefs are a blind spot that you have not investigated yet. And do not put any faith on anything that has been given to you by another human being who was here years ago and created some status quo that you're inheriting because other men have kept it alive to control you through your mind.
Unless there is... I don't think so. I think that is probably the summation of this. But I'll give you the opportunity. Is there anything else that you want to put out? Any... You know, tragedyandhope.com is the current focal point, is the project.
Tragedyandhope.com is the world's first online multimedia magazine made specifically to empower you with the information that corporations can't afford to give you. Literally can't afford to give you, because if they gave it to you, they would lose their advertisers, they would lose their power in your lives, because they haven't figured out a way yet to make money from being truthful. So tragedyandhope.com, you can subscribe for a free 2-week trial. Go ahead and sign up. Get into the Tragedy and Hope community. Start to experience the fear-free area and the resources and the tools that we give you and put at your disposal. There's also the brain with 3,500 different items connected up, so it can help expedite anyone's journey through all this, you know, this myriad and multitude of information that we have to take in to find out where we are. There's a bunch of friendly people in there who have been patiently waiting along with our lengthy pieces of media over the past several years. And, you know, it's unlike any other place out there, and it was created specifically for you, if you're interested.
Richard Grove, thank you so much for appearing on Media Monarchy. And again, this was sort of a pivotal time. This was, I believe, the time to do it. We're here at the 8th anniversary of something that had ripples effect and affects both ourselves and everyone else in the world, and we're just here trying to disseminate the information. So again, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. It means a lot to me.
Hey, James, it means a lot to me, and I want to thank you and your audience for, you know, just doing what you guys do out there. I mean, showing up every week to download a podcast is not hard work, but finding the time to break your habits, put it into your schedule, to listen to it, to take some notes, and to take something positive from it is, you know, that's half the battle. The other half is just showing up. So turn off your TV, go to the library, leverage your Netflix subscription, get the Medici disc. There's like a 3 or 4 disc set. Learn all about this stuff. Stop watching Hollywood productions, cancel your magazine subscriptions, and vote with your fork. That's all I got.
That was it. He understood it now. He had told them his secret. And in denying him, they had told him theirs. He was the future. He was a perfect picture of the future, and they were afraid to let anyone see what the future was like. Already they were looking ahead. They were figuring the future, and somewhere in the future they saw war. To fight that war, they would need men. And if men saw the future, they wouldn't fight. So they were masking the future. They were keeping the future a soft, quiet, deadly secret. They knew that if all the little people, all the little guys saw the future, they would begin to ask questions. They would ask questions and they would find answers, and they would say to the guys who wanted them to fight, they would say, "You lying, thieving sons of bitches, we won't fight.
We won't be dead. We will live. We are the world. We are the future. And we won't let you butcher us, no matter what you say, no matter what speeches you make, no matter what slogans you write. Remember it well. We are the world. We are what makes it go round. We make bread and cloth and guns. We are the hub of the wheel and the spokes and the wheel itself. And without us, you would be hungry, naked worms, and we will not die. It will not be us who die. It will be you. It will be you. You who urge us on to battle. You who incite us against ourselves. You who would have one cobbler kill another cobbler. You who would have one man who works kill another man who works. You who would have one human being who wants only to live kill another human being who wants only to live. If you tell us to make the world safe for democracy, we will take you seriously, and by God and by Christ, we will make it so. Make no mistake of it. We will live. We will be alive, and we will walk and talk and eat and sing and laugh and feel and love. And there are children in tranquility, in security, in decency, in peace.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to an interview with Richard Andrew Grove of TragedyAndHope.com. I really appreciate all you guys who are out there listening to this broadcast. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm the host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you from September 10th, 2009 in Portland, Oregon. I want to again thank my guest, Richard Grove, and thank you guys for listening.
Hey, just so you know, it's now September 11th here, so we actually got all the way into the day, and we've started off the day right with a little healthy, nutritious activism. Thanks so much, James.
Absolutely, brother. Thank you. Take care.
And that's a wrap. That's a wrap. There we go.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
On my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
Yep. This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.